My first guest this morning is Susan Eva Porter, PhD, the author of a book called Bully Nation, Why America's Approach to Childhood Aggression is Bad for Everyone. And my second guest coming up at 8:30 will be John Davis, Santa Fe's current poet laureate. I hope you'll stay tuned for that as well. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning, Hollis.
Thank you for coming on the show. I don't know a lot about bullying, but by the time I got through reading this book, it had changed my mind about the few things I did know about the way our society currently talks about and deals with what it considers bullying. And, you know, you'd said in the book, virtually every school district in the country has a bullying policy now. And so I looked up some policies online, and I was shocked at what I found. Tell us what's wrong with the way we're defining bullying.
Oh, boy, that's a big question. There's so much wrong. But let me start by saying, Hollis, the thing I oppose and the thing I talk about in my book is our approaches. I don't look at any particular person or any agency or any movement that's trying to prevent bullying, because we're all in it together to want to make kids' lives better. So let me just start by saying that. But with that said, let me launch into what I think is problematic. First of all, the term has really lost any usefulness, because we now define bullying in such broad strokes that often when somebody says, oh, I've been bullied, or bullying is happening, it's meaningless, because we don't understand what it is anymore, because it could be that you got beaten up and thrown into a trash can, or it could be that somebody teased you for having a big nose. And so the term itself is difficult, and yet it's now a term that triggers a kind of response in schools where we have to have a very lockstep response. So if somebody says they've been bullied, if a child says, or a parent says a child has been bullied, most schools now have to respond in ways that can almost be counterintuitive, and certainly have robbed us of our power to have common sense in terms of what the particular situation is. So right there, I think, we have become misguided, because we now assume this word means a certain thing, but we don't really know what it is, but now we have to respond in this really big way.
Susan, I have to say, I fail to let our listening audience know where you are coming from in terms of your background. Dr. Porter has a master's degree in education, a master's degree in clinical social work, and a PhD in clinical psychology. And she's been working in schools for 25 years. And this book of hers, Psychology Today, called Bully Nation, the most important book ever published on bullying. So, and you said you're not after anyone or opposed to any group that's trying to fight the problem of bullying. Rather, you're looking for a way to reframe the discussion about it. Let's talk.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, No, you go ahead.
Well, in your book, you talk about three main reasons that our approach to bullying is bad. Can you talk about that?
Sure. First of all, the language we use, I call it bully language. And we call a child who's being aggressive a bully. We call a child who is on the other end of the aggression a victim. We use the term bystander a lot. I'm sure listeners are familiar with those three terms. If you break down the terms and really think about them, what they reveal is a way that we're looking at children that's very, very limiting. For instance, bully and victim is a black and white dichotomy.
Right.
You can't have a good bully, and you can't have a victim that has any responsibility. So right there, with our language, we are framing the debate, but more importantly and more dangerously, we're framing how we see children. So if we call a child a bully, we have cast them in a wholly negative light. And when we call a child a victim, we have said that child bears no responsibility for what's happened. And that right there means we don't ever see what's happening between children as a dynamic. And those of us who work in schools and work with children know that 99% of the time, it's a dynamic. And if we don't look at the dynamic and we just look at the labels, we've lost the nuance. We've really lost the gist of the issue, and we're no longer in a position to actually help kids because we're coming down with a hammer, and we're using the wrong tool. And our language is the most effective tool we have to help children, and right now we're applying, it's not just we have the wrong tool, we have the wrong toolkit. It's really, really problematic.
I think everybody can relate to this. You know, I'm 57, so we didn't have this kind of language or any of this going on when I was in school. However, you reminded me of how children in school can be labeled as the bad kid. And yeah. It doesn't matter what the kid does or what the child achieves or how hard they're trying. Once they get into that box, the bad kid, the troublemaker, or in this case, the bully, they're stuck and they can't get out. And it's... go ahead.
Yes, very good. I keep interrupting. I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
So I worked with this one kid who was 7, and he had been called a bully since he was 3. Which, right there, I hope listeners let that sink in. How a 3-year-old has intent or malicious desire. Now, a 3-year-old can have very bad behavior. Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. And kids hurt each other all the time. I'm not saying they don't. But if we actually want to help them, labeling sets our feet in cement. So this kid had been labeled a bully since he was 3, and he was 7. Mm. And one day, yet again at school, his mom, was reported to the teachers. And I had observed this kid lots of times, and a big part of my work with the adults around them was to say, look, you have got to stop calling this kid a bully. Let's be creative. Let's be creative and figure out what's going on. But let's stop calling this kid a bully. Anyway, so the mom was told yet again the kid had done something bad. And let me tell you, what the bully language does is it frames for the adult the outcome of any interaction. So when this kid was in an interaction, and because he was labeled a bully, there's no way he was going to come out of the interaction looking good. So at the end of the school day, the mom talks to the kid and says, well, you know, she was in the car. She did everything right. She waited until everything was calm. She waited until a non-heated moment. The kid was well-fed, well-rested, whatever. And she says, so what happened at school today? And he just lashed out. He said, I know I'm bad. I know I'm bad. Just stop it. And that was it.
Wow.
The kid couldn't hear a thing. And he knew, you know, children aren't stupid.
Right.
They know. When we see them in a certain way, they know when our eyes have shut and our ears have closed to future possibility and to growth.
Right.
They know it. And we would never call a child stupid for failing a math test.
Right.
Or asking a question or making a mistake. And we are doing that when it comes to social emotional learning. Every single child has to learn to deal with their aggression. Every single child has to learn to manage relationships and manage social dynamics. We are dimming them.
And every single parent has to learn how to deal with their child as their child learns to deal with their aggression.
Absolutely. And one of the things when people push back a little bit and say to me, yes, but what if the child really is a bully? What I'll say to a parent is, what if that were your child being called a bully?
Mm-hmm.
And then they start to get it.
Right.
They start to get that because if it's somebody they love and somebody they're very, very close to, then they understand the sting of the word. They understand the limitation of the word. It's very easy to hurl that word at somebody you don't know or like or care about. But when it's closer to home, that's when parents start to think, oh, right, I wouldn't want my kid being called a bully, even though I know my child can do X, Y, and Z.
Right.
But I would want a person, you know, parents understand that, and this is where parents should be really alarmed, because we have been given this language to use with children, and if your child is the one being called a bully, this language allows people to close their mind to the possibility of that child being anything different.
To stereotype your child.
And so that in and of itself should have parents quite alarmed by how we're dealing with this. Because when it's your child being called the bully, you start to realize, oh my gosh, this thing is rigged.
I'm talking, just for listeners who may have just joined us, I'm talking with Dr. Susan Eva Porter, the author of Bully Nation, Why America's Approach to Childhood Aggression is Bad for Everyone. We've been talking about how school districts have policies and our new approach, or relatively new approach, to the idea of bullying is actually putting kids, stereotyping children. And in a way, even, I think, Susan, reinforcing that the eternal triangle of victim, persecutor, rescuer, you know, with the children and the schools, the teachers and administrators in this role of rescuer, where they have to apply, no matter what the circumstances, because of their own school district's policies, they have to apply a whole lot of rules and sanctions against children. And in your book, you actually describe some of those sanctions. It sounds like, you know, almost kangaroo court.
Yeah, well, certainly in some school districts it is, and in some states it is, and every state differs, and I encourage listeners to think about what their own school district says. You know, look up the anti-bullying policies. Many schools will have it on their front, their home page of a website. And yes, it sets up, you know, I talked to a mom of a five-year-old who was in a sandbox, and not the proverbial, she was in an actual sandbox with a kid, and you know, took a fistful of sand and put it in the other kid's mouth. And this is what five-year-olds do.
Right.
They call it play. And maybe the kid getting the sand doesn't feel it's all that fun. But so this kid got written up. This child has a letter in her file. So let parents know that there are files out there for five-year-olds.
Wow.
And this child has now, so this completely innocent, albeit potentially harmful, sure, you get sand in your
sure.
mouth, that's not good. But I think we could all agree, fairly innocent, even if the behavior was based in aggression, it's still, nothing the child should be damned for. Do they need some instruction? Sure. Might they need a consequence? Sure. But to put a letter in a child's file, I find that laughable, and yet it's being done.
Yes.
So I stopped laughing when I realized, oh my gosh, we're actually doing this. Okay, this is problematic.
Right.
This is really bad for kids, and it's really bad for us to think a five-year-old needs a file.
Right.
Because of what happened in the sandbox. It's a little crazy.
So we were talking about the three main reasons you say that our approach to bullying is bad, and we've been talking about bully language. You also say that our whole system now inhibits resilience. What do you mean by that?
Well, our zero tolerance. So many policies are zero tolerance, meaning, okay, we just, you know, you can't be aggressive. You can't, if the word, if we start to institute bully language, then we just have a zero tolerance for it. Well, it's really smart to have zero tolerance for certain things, such as guns in schools or illicit drugs in schools.
Sure.
Those things do not add learning, and they have no place being there. But every child has aggression. So if what you say is we have zero tolerance for certain kinds of aggression, that doesn't mean we should have zero response. But if we have zero tolerance, what we've done is abdicated our responsibility to help kids understand how to manage their aggression. But zero tolerance, a lot of studies are coming out now just showing that it doesn't work because it's too black and white. But what it also doesn't do is enlist everybody around the child to help the child develop some resilience, because we are saying, with our bully language, the bully is wrong, the victim is not responsible, and therefore neither child has to learn anything.
Right.
And with zero tolerance, we just come in, as you said, we're sort of the rescuers, we come in, and there's nothing learned in the situation on either side. And we learn, we develop resilience through our capacity to tolerate things, withstand things, learn from things, fall down. And what we're doing is we are taking away these opportunities by
right.
saying to children, you shouldn't have to tolerate any discomfort.
I just thought of one, that's the overall goal, you explain, is that parents in this generation seem to feel that it is their obligation to protect their children from having any bad feelings.
From That's right.
being sad or hurt by other children or any of that, which is part of, it's a normal part of growing up.
Absolutely. And when people ask me about kids today, I'm pretty quick to say kids haven't changed. Parents have. And our expectation of what parents are supposed to do, and I do not fault parents for this, but parents are taught and parents are told that being a parent means to now monitor all aspects of a child's experience. And now with technology, we can. So the kid has a phone and the kid can text and the kid can let us know what they're doing. You know, I work at a school where parents are texted all day long and then I get a phone call. What's happening with my kid? Check on my kid. I just got a text.
You mentioned, I mean, you're very explicit that technology is actually, although it can be great in emergencies to help children and parents connect with one another, that often it creates this deep dependency so that a child can't even go along its normal day away from parents. The time they're supposed to be learning to individuate and separate and all of that, instead, you know, they and mom and dad are texting back and forth or calling all day.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and I see this all the time. And I no longer, you know, 10 years ago, I was horrified by it. Now I just accept it because, I mean, I don't accept it willingly, but I accept that, okay, that's part of my job now is to mediate the difficulties that come as a result of, you know, kids and teenagers. I work with teenagers right now. They don't have a lot of impulse control. So when they have a bad feeling and they have, a cell phone and they can text, they might just text their mom or dad and say, oh, I'm upset this happened to me. And then the mom or dad thinks, oh, my job is to do something, instead of to say to the kid, we'll talk about it when you get home. Don't
right.
text during the day unless it's an emergency. Parents don't do that anymore for fear that, well, if I don't, then they'll get upset and then I'll be rejecting and they won't, you know, have self-esteem because I haven't, you know, and it's crazy. Again, I don't fault parents because the technology has given us this means, and then we think, well, it must be good that my child is reaching out to me, and oh, my child never talks to me anyway, so if they're calling me in distress, then I better respond, and all of this sort of stuff. But it's a very, very vicious cycle, and it is creating this kind of dependency, and boy, the lack of resilience, the lack of emotional resilience, and the ability to tolerate, you know, resilient people can tolerate difficult emotions.
I want to offer up an example of my own. I was a military brat, and so we moved every year to 18 months throughout my childhood. I was always the new kid in school. I was always teased. And, you know, that was very painful, and it was very difficult. But guess who can walk into any room and make friends in 5 minutes? That's me.
That's right.
You know, and I
That's
couldn't
right.
text mom and dad and say I'm sad. Now, sure, did I go home at night probably, you know, and say it was terrible, they were mean to me, mommy. Yeah, you know, but that, you know, there wasn't that kind of dependency. I had to handle things on my own. And, you know, and nowadays that kind of teasing might be characterized as bullying. So,
yes,
but we don't have a lot of time left, Susan, so I want you to talk about your approach, the approach you advocate, which you call by the acronym GRIT.
Well, the most important thing I could say to listeners, my approach, you know, aside, although I think it's useful, is if we stopped using the label bullying, if we stopped using the label bully and victim right away, that in and of itself would cause us to be creative and bring our problem-solving brains to bear in these situations. So that's all a listener has to know. Stop using the language, and you'll start using your brain. But the most important thing about grit is to develop something called a growth mindset. Our current approach to bullying creates a fixed mindset, and a fixed mindset leaves us inflexible. It leaves us focused on the problem instead of the solution. A growth mindset is about looking towards solutions. It's about having faith in development and growth and change, and we can do that immediately by stopping the labels and by stopping being reactive the way kids are. Our adult brain needs to come in and calm down a situation versus heating it up. And if we have a response that heats up a situation, which our language does, it's very inflammatory, then we're going in the wrong direction. So
Susan, do you think it's possible, for example, if a parent was called and told that their child had bullied another child, could the parent go into the school and sit down and say, I don't want that language used about my child. My child and another child are having a problem, maybe a power conflict, whatever. I don't want my child called a bully. Is that an appropriate response?
Well, yeah, gee, I hope so. And this is why I wrote the book. And I wrote the book because I didn't feel parents had that freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't feel schools had that freedom. And I wanted to empower people who are trapped in this, I think it's just an insane cycle. I wanted to empower them to say, we have to think about it differently. I'm willing to look at the issue. I'm willing to even call it a problem if it is. But we must frame it differently. And prior to writing my book, I didn't see where that permission lay. And that is what... So I hope parents can go into schools and say that, and I hope schools can listen. And I hope that some of the ideas I've written about will empower them to feel that they can do that effectively.
You're essentially advocating a creative solution, as you've said, which is a lot more work. It is a lot harder to have to sit down, or even parents to sit down, when their two children are having difficulty and not get triggered and not get aggressive themselves, but instead talk creatively about what's going on, how do we handle this, how do we set up appropriate consequences if one or both children are acting out in a really inappropriate way, and how do we encourage them in their growth?
Well, absolutely. This is much more difficult, but certainly much more satisfying because it can lead to change. But what I would say is anytime a program, an anti-bullying program, any program, anti-drug and alcohol, anytime a program says, this is it, this is the effective, it's the three steps to doing this, there is nothing about child rearing that is easy.
Right.
Nothing. Ask any parent.
Thank you so much. Susan Eva Porter is the author of Bully Nation, Why America's Approach to Childhood Aggression is Bad for Everyone. It's a really great book. I hope a lot of people will read it. Thank you so much for being with me today, Susan, on the Radio
Cafe. My pleasure,
Cafe.
Holland.
All right. We're going to take a break now. Please stay tuned to the Radio Cafe.